Mark, a silly thing I picked up on from sort of one of the from the very beginning of your talk was when you mentioned. Now this is we're talking 10,000 years ago. You mentioned bands, fine, and then through marriage, and I thought, hang on a minute, didn't marriage exist then?
Whatever form it took, if it took any formal form, yeah. I mean, through pairing, perhaps, would have, yeah, that's a good point. Thank you, Carla. I mean, I think perhaps the word marriage used quite broadly. I mean,
I thought you might have meant that. Okay, thanks, Mark. Alan and Janet, there's a cue here now.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, really enjoyed that, Mark. Really, really informative. Thank you for that. We both did. And I just want to say, speaking personally, as somebody who believes totally in the concept of Gaia, absolutely with you all the way. You know, we're destroying, we're not going to destroy, we are disrupting the organism that we're part of. And I truly believe that the planet is going to go on and survive all the degradation that humans are putting on it. And it will change and evolve. And unfortunately, I think for a lot of species, us included, there will probably be little or no place left for us. But again, I'll go back to what I was saying. It was a great talk. Enjoyed it very much, and lots of things to talk about or think about. And again, thank you.
No, it just occurred to me, Alan, that the universe doesn't really, how can I put it, care what happens to us, right? Whether we live or we don't live, the universe doesn't care. It's important to us. 'Cause the universe will go on, and this planet will, anyway, whatever happens, this planet, I mean, you know, in cosmic time, everything will go on. It's very hard to get one's mind around that. But anyway, we have an obligation, you know, where we are here and now, to struggle for the best world that we can have, right? For everybody. I mean, that's, I think, what drives us. What else are we going to do?
Dougie.
Hi, yeah, I've read a few Noah Harari books. And basically, I mean, there's one called 21 Things for the 21st Century. And he's very good at describing things, religions and what's wrong with the world. But he ends up by saying all you can do is meditate because you can't do anything about it. Right? You know, he said he was a socialist when he started out and then he gave up on it or whatever. And he just points to the fact that the Earth will eventually get destroyed and things, and all you can do about things is meditate, right? You know, I know factually he's very good. I mean, Sapiens is a good book, and you know the book I read is packed full of useful information about different religions and different societies, but. Yeah, I mean, I take your point about animal rights. I mean, it's difficult. I was brought up in Scotland, you know, and it was meat and two veg, so you get used to that, really, you know. So it's difficult for me to change, but I suppose I could, right? I do try to eat veggie when I can sometimes.
Thanks, Dougie. Paul?
Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Mark. That was absolutely terrific. Very intense, and clearly a lot of effort you put into that. There's quite a few things I do and don't agree with some of the stuff you're saying. I mean, you talk about animals not being born or not likely to think of themselves as being, well, it's like the whole turkeys voting for Christmas kind of thing. I think human beings, we are set aside, we are and do have superior brains and ability to think and have feelings That's not to say animals are dumb, anything but. I love animals with a great passion. I would do everything I ever could if to come to the defence of an animal being mistreated. Indeed, I am a member of the Glasgow West of Scotland hunt saboteurs, and many a time I've been out and come head to head with farmers and huntsmen, and even came to blows occasionally when I was, well, up until a couple of years ago when I was a little bit fitter, and I could stand up for the rights of foxes and every other animal you care to mention that would be mistreated. You know, I dislike, I have a passion and a hatred for animals being exploited, you know, in whatever way, you know, we've seen dancing bears and what have you. But animals are there for our pleasure, not only to view and to look after and as companions. I am a carnivore, and I don't anticipate ever changing my mind with that soon. It's one of the very few pleasures I have in life, and if we establish socialism tomorrow, I don't suppose that'll ever change. But the husbandry and the care that must go into the welfare of animals is paramount, and I'm sure that will be the case in a socialist society. You look at what happened in Zhuhai and how it's generally understood that the cause of the COVID outbreak came from the mishandling and the horrible conditions that animals were kept in a wet market. That will clearly have to come to an end, and one of the most important things to have to stop. But I still believe that animals will be used as part of the human diet. Whether it be chicken, pigs, lambs, beef cattle, milk being produced, you know, as part of the food chain. You know, lions kill deer, they kill antelope, they kill buffalo, and there are lots of other meat-eating animals out there. You know, they have to survive, and whilst humans have got the capacity to choose not to have meat, I for one believe that that it should be a matter of choice, all based on the best possible conditions of animals being looked after. I have the book that you mentioned on audio. It's a terrific book. I'm also in the process of listening to the book about Gaia, which is the idea of the sort of the earth goddess or Mother Earth, and the importance that of taking care and it being a two-way process, and what we all must do to pull together, forgetting not that although we talk about humankind or humanity being so destructive, it's not so much humanity per se, but a select few of the capitalist class and the production processes involved. Whilst we all have a responsibility to reject that, we're on this earth for such a short period of time that so many people generally go along with it and accept it. But it is predominantly as a result of modern production techniques that the earth is in the state that it's in. And, you know, I'm sure things will improve over time. I do believe that global warming and the likes can be reversed with the right set of conditions. And I think it's something that we obviously have to explore and take advantage of as time goes on, when we don't have the same kind of considerations that we do under capitalism. But those are my thoughts on it, controversial as they may be. As I say, at risk of repeating myself, I'm every bit as concerned about animal welfare as I'm sure we all are. But and there's always a but. I also believe that animals can be used for the benefit of the human race, so long as they're looked after and treated with care and love. Thank you. And thanks again, Mark. Cheers.
Thanks, Paul. Do you want to comment on that, Mark?
Well, I'm a bit hesitant because I obviously sort of disagree quite strongly with some of the things Paul said. Maybe I should just say something along the lines of, I think that one of the points I was trying to make is that this, you know, we in Marxism, we have the idea, or not the idea, we actually believe that the mode of production, the forces of production and the relations of production form the base of society, and that our ideas and beliefs about what is true and what is good are the superstructure. And of course, we know it's a complicated issue. We know there's all sorts of things going into it. But this issue of the domestication of animals and the rearing of animals is something that has accompanied us for a really long period of time, not from the beginning, but for a long period of time. And it's been the case in all different societies. And therefore, it's something that I think that has become felt to be, you know, like normal and natural and okay. And, you know, I made the point about the sexist, not sexist exactly, but, you know, use of things like man to that was 50 years ago when we used man as a generic term. And now you listen to it and go, oh, it hurts. Are you talking about man as male man, or are you talking about humans in general? You know, it's weird. And now we know it's inappropriate. There were all sorts of things, as we know, that even 100 or 200 years ago, we couldn't even live with now. So to feel that something is normal, the little lamb, you know, Mary has a little lamb, you know, its fleece was white as snow and all that business. I still remember, you know, admiring, you know, some lambs in the field and being so, oh, they're so lovely and everything. And then you go for a curry and have yourself a lamb tikka masala. And I remember telling a Polish person, because in Poland they tend to eat mutton. And I said, no, we like lamb, you know, we like them young. And I was thinking, this is just ridiculous. I mean, I felt, you know, this is something wrong with that. There's an interesting thing that Voltaire said, and he said this: what barbarous person would roast a lamb if that lamb could plead with us in a moving discourse not to be both assassin and cannibal? One of the things about the animals is that they're silent, and a lot of what goes on in the factory farming industry, from which we get probably the vast majority of all of our food, is all happening in silence. I mean, there are occasional films, but there's stuff going on that we just don't actually want to know about. And of course, the way it's all packaged up and sold to us in the supermarket, so this is a capitalist issue, is beautiful. I mean, take milk. I mean, I always think of milk as bloody coming off the mountains, like flowing, like mountains have milk pouring out of them. Whereas if you go back to before the Second World War, everybody knew that milk was bloody, you know, had diseases in it. It was dangerous stuff. But we've become persuaded that milk is a flowing mount from the mount. So, you know, there's a lot of going on in our minds there we may, you know, the realization of what's going on, which we may or may not get, can shock us, I think. So, you know, that's my comments for what it's worth on that.
Thanks, Mark. Moggy.
Hello. Thank you, Mark, for a very, very enlightening talk and for putting the case for animals. Just adding to what Paul was saying, you'd be hard pressed to get Eskimos to become vegetarian because they can't grow crops. So they would either have to give up killing whales and seals and perhaps move to a warmer climate or something like that. Also, I feel that if people are keeping pets, they've got to treat them as equals. And some years ago, yeah, one of my neighbours decided she was going to be vegan. And so she was quite radical about it, decided that nobody should keep pets. Pets should just be allowed to wander the streets. They shouldn't be interfered with in any way. And I had to tell her off once for leaving my gate wide open because I didn't want my dog to run out on the road and get killed. But she believed that, you know, they shouldn't be given any assistance like vaccinations, or they shouldn't be dewormed, or they shouldn't have stuff to get rid of fleas. And I thought, well, no, if you're keeping pets, you have a duty to keep them healthy. I treat my pets as equals, but I do make sure that they are vaccinated and wormed regularly, and they never get fleas, and their coats are brushed. So, I mean, if you're sticking up for animal rights, you've also got to stick up for their welfare. So that's just my thoughts on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Margie. Actually, is there no one else in the speaking queue at the moment? Sorry, Paddy's come up. Paddy?
There's some interesting points coming up there. I must admit, as a vegetarian myself, I was kind of rooting for this talk. I don't think we talk about this enough. I don't think socialists talk about this enough. I do think there is a case for some animals, you know, because you know, the science is coming on quite a lot about, you know, so animals understand sort of you know, moral dilemmas. They have you know, normative views of how other animals ought to behave. All sorts of interesting things coming out. Sense of honour, you know, fascinating stuff. The thing is, I'm a bit wary though of taking the argument to a sort of evangelical extreme. Now, I'll explain why that is. I mean. One could take the view, let's say, a sort of Jainist view. This is a sort of extreme view that all animal lives, you know, are precious. It kind of an animal lives matter type approach, if you like. Of course, you pretty quickly run into a sort of logical reductio at this point, because, you know, somebody's going to say, well, what, all animal lives? What about parasitical wasps or mosquitoes? What about river flukes that make people blind? What about even smaller animals? What about the plague bacillus? What about things that are, we're not even sure that they're alive, but they might be? What about the COVID virus? What about the rights of the COVID virus not to be wiped out? I'm not putting that argument. I'm just saying I have seen that being put. And that is a problem when you take an extreme argument about all animals or all life is precious. It's not really like that, is it? I mean, you have to kind of take these things on a case-by-case basis. And I think if you look at what's happened to animals over the course of human history, I think it's not so much that animals have been exploited as the fact that certainly in the capitalist period... Pardon?
Sorry, Paddy, we lost you for a minute.
Oh, okay, maybe my connection. I'm just saying the problem surely isn't that the exploitation itself up until modern times. The biggest problem is the mechanisation of that process. It's become absolutely gigantic and quite appalling. I mean, so I suppose what I'm saying is that, you know... I think we should keep our options open for socialism. If there's a case for animals being still farmed and eaten, you know, perhaps on marginal land that won't support crops, like, you know, Moggy was talking about the Inuit. I understand they don't like being called Eskimos, but You know, those sort of situations, highland areas where, you know, it's very stony, it's very hard to grow anything. Like where I live in the northwest of England, it's very stony, lots of hills, hard to grow crops. So there's a lot of sheep. So I think as socialists, we need to think about, we need to keep a weather eye on what socialism might be like. We need to keep our options open. Things are changing now anyway with things like lab-grown meat technology, which is now hitting the market. So, you know, in the future, you know, people like Paul who are saying, well, I eat meat, I like meat, and Dougie saying the same thing. Well, you know, the products that are coming out now are in some cases, they're so advanced that you probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. So I'm just arguing for a nuanced approach to all this. I do agree with the objection of, that some members have put forward in the past, that it's hard enough to get socialists as it is. It will be even harder if we expect them to be vegan as well. So there we go. That's my thoughts.
Thanks, Paddy. Mark, do you want to? Would you like to comment?
Yeah, thank you. I like this evangelical approach. I mean, one of the problems I have with, let's say, the nuanced approach that you're putting forward, Paddy, is that it's a bit agnostic in the sense that, you know, what about the does it mean we kind of do nothing because it, there are various moral conundrums posed, and for example, you were talking about sheep and things on but what is the ground from your point of view, Paddy? And actually, I'd love you to do a talk on this, because I found your, I think I've mentioned it more than once, your 2017 talk at the summer school, the only summer school I've been to. You know, I love that, but it was one of the milestones for me, to be honest. But what grounds would you have of saying it's okay for us to, you know, let's say use sheep? What grounds are there for that? Because I mean, you know, it's not just about let's say my house is being attacked, but I'm being attacked by some, you know, animal that's going to kill me, or, you know, like a parasite. I'm talking about us going out. You talked about the mechanization, but us going out actively, you know, enslaving, it's not like we're creating them. We're making cows. We're breeding them to be as they are. I mean, what grounds do we have for that at all? I mean, there's always going to be questions at the edges of things. What is wrong with a basic position of, you know, if we don't have to, we don't kill? Because again, if you are, there's all sorts of conundrums people raise, but we're talking about us operating on a mass scale, using animals for our own pleasure. That word has already been used this evening, where we don't have to. You know, what is the grounds for doing that, in your view, Paddy?
Can I just come back quickly?
Yeah.
Just briefly. Well, I think. I seem to remember that talk at summer school. I seem to remember saying something along the lines of, the strongest argument for all of this is the practical argument. As soon as you get into sort of moral arguments, you know, the ground starts to shift under you and move under you, and you know, anything's moral depending on your point of view. My feeling is you've got to look at what's sustainable. I mean, like, for a start, my biggest objection to meat farming in capitalism is it's not sustainable, and it's not going to be sustainable in the future. It's going to get worse and worse. So if you took all the meat farming away, you'd have four times as much land to grow food as you currently have. So these things are well known. I mean, the ocean, you know, the oceans are being fished out at a ludicrous rate as well for the same sort of thing. So I think it's about practicalities, about sustainabilities. I think that's where we. I think that's where the argument is the strongest, and where I feel it's weakest is in the kind of moral dimension, you know, because it becomes a sort of shadow boxing with all sorts of people with all sorts of agendas. So if we keep it to the practicalities, I think we can make a strong case. That's me.
What about people? Are we okay with, I don't know, we're okay with infanticide? Are we okay? Why are we not okay with having that approach to people? If there's too many people, we can just kill half of them. Why not? I mean, I don't see any that I actually take the completely. Of course, it may be. I'm not saying. Well, I do believe I'm right. I take a completely different view, Paddy. I think the moral argument. The word is a dodgy word because we don't like this word moral, do we? But why is the moral argument not strong? Like, for example, not causing suffering, not causing harm. And, you know, apart from when we have to. Well, I mean, that would clear up a lot of issues. I agree with there's lots of conundrums around the world, aren't there? I mean, if we don't invest a certain amount of money somewhere, people are going to die because of health issues or whatever. But we as human beings operate on the basis that human life is worth preserving. That's our stated, I think socialists take that view, don't they? I mean, we do think that some conditions of living are not worthy of humans. I mean, I think the quotes, of course, from Marx, that would be the kind of language that he was using at that time. And I don't think that's foreign to a socialist cause. I think we do use moral arguments in the socialist cause, don't we?
Just very, very quickly, I know you want to go on to other people. Just very quickly, then, I think you're right, Mark. We do use moral arguments. I'm not saying not to use moral arguments at all. I'm simply saying that the strongest arguments are the practical arguments, the ones about practicality, about sustainability. Those are the strongest ones. Those are the ones that will get the most agreement across the board. That's all I'm saying.
Paul?
Thanks, Carla. Yeah, and thanks to you too, Mark. I generally agree with a lot of what you're saying, Mark, and I salute you for taking what some might say is the moral high ground. You know, we should be defending the rights of animals, but there are different levels of morality that we have to adhere to as well. You know, it's a case, I think, of trying to strike a balance. Most of you know that I depend on a guide dog to get around. There are some people out there who would say, oh, sticking a harness on a dog for the benefit of a human is entirely wrong. Whereas I would obviously say, and I would obviously say, because I know the excitement that comes on when I get my harness out for my dog to get me around is palpable, you know. So that's one side of it. The other thing I would say is just recognising what Paddy was saying, animals don't have the same level of moral capacity. They're certainly not dumb. And you see that in a lot of the time across species. You only have to switch on YouTube and you see images of dogs rescuing kittens that have fallen in quarries and stuff. My own dog, whenever the cats, we've got a couple of cats. I mean, I've kept hens and guinea pigs that are my kids and I and Linda, my wife. Have kept and looked for and the best possible conditions we can give them, you know. We feed the wild birds and stuff and all the rest of it too, the sort of things that bring us pleasure and helps survival of those species too. Whenever our cats, we've got a couple of cats, we had four at one point, but whenever our cats are, the two male cats are about, and any cat owners will know about this, whenever the two big dominant boys are about to have a go at each other and they're sizing each other up, Fred, my guide dog, will stand to attention. He's watching them. It's almost like he's refereeing the spat, you know. And then when they're about to go head to head, then he will give a bark as though he's almost telling them off. So, you know, you do have these things that that do happen across species, and I recognise that animals are a lot cleverer than what a lot of people give them credit for. Insofar as the actual food chain goes, ironically, we have summer school coming next week, and those who are attending will have received a menu. I don't object to eating vegetables. I'm not overly keen on them. I ought to look at the size of me and see I probably don't eat enough fruit and veg. But at this particular summer school, we all received a menu which was predominantly plant-based. There was some meat options, but there was at least one option that I chose not to have meat, and that was because it clearly described it as being halal. Anyone knows about halal, I don't need to spell it out to you, the brutal way in which these animals are killed, I think, is entirely inhumane. Some might say, well, you know, a bolt to the head is not much better, but again, this is a symptom of the world in which we live, where everything's done on the cheap. You know, we see young seals being bludgeoned to death rather than being shot because it's cheaper to hit them over the fucking head with a bloody axe than it is to give them a short, sharp jolt to bring them to an end. Again, it's a symptom of capitalism. I've got absolutely no doubt that when capitalism is destined and finally relinquished to the history books, the animal kingdom will be treated with every bit of degree as respect as we treat ourselves. But it's still down to choice. If people choose to eat or not eat animals, it's down to choice. And no matter how persuasive people, some people, and I, you know, please understand, Matt, a good, bloody good man. And I've got huge respect for you. And I really, really admire your passion. I agree with so much of it. But there's not a person on this earth could ever persuade me otherwise not to enjoy the pleasures that I get from basically being a carnivore. But that's my other contribution for tonight. And I hope that I respect everyone else's views. You will do the same for me. Cheers.
Okay. Alan and Janet?
I just want to say, for me, there's a fundamental difference between factory farming, factory fishing, and what you would call sort of the hunter-gatherers. The Inuit of this world and the packs of lions and other carnivores, they don't herd things together. They don't breed animals and keep them in pens. They're opportunist hunters. I can also say that I've used the word unique here this evening, is that I'm probably the only person here this evening who has actually killed meat for my own table. And the biggest one having been a pig. We talked about pigs. They were killed humanely, and I don't have a problem with people who hunt for the table, and many of our neighbours hunt for the table. Anybody who has ever followed my blog in the past will know that my neighbours often call in the middle of the night, having shot a pig in their corn patch, and have a pig, and I do the butchering at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's, you know, the problem I have is that far too much meat is eaten because it's convenient and easy to walk into the supermarket or the shop. And invariably, the meat that you're getting in the packet in the supermarket has been kept in the most appalling conditions, where it actually costs far more to put that meat in the packet, in the polystyrene tray in your supermarket and on your table, than it would. I mean, it's just the cost in what they're fed vegetable matter and corrupted fish meal and popped up bits of animal bits. This is all part of the capitalist system. As a species, we need to eat far less meat. Perhaps, you know, those who enjoy their meat should perhaps. I'm being silly here, but perhaps they should go out and collect some of it themselves. I just want to say that the system the system that keeps animals in appalling conditions. You've only got to look at those huge meat processing plants in the United States, various parts of Europe and Australia, and how it does not make ecological sense. I have no problem with killing an animal to eat it, put it on the table. I really don't. I do have a problem with animals kept in factory conditions so that we can conveniently walk into a supermarket and pick a polystyrene tray up with our Sunday lunch on it. I really do have a problem with that. We need to get back to a more... We are not, I will say this to Paul, we are not carnivores, we are omnivores. We've evolved as omnivores, and we eat all sorts of things, not just meat. I could go on and on and on about the thing, but I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Alan. Pat?
Yes, hello. Thank you. There are so many problems that I find it difficult to separate one of the problems. I always felt that we had to solve the main problem of getting to the support for the ending of capitalism in order to find the way of solving other problems. And I feel that what I think of as man's inhumanity to man, and I never felt left out by the use of mankind, which probably tells you something about my age, but obviously would use different terms now because that's the present way of doing it. But I sort of felt that in order for animals to be treated better, human animals had to treat each other better and had to have a kind of society that made it possible to treat each other as human beings. And human beings of one society, not different countries, different tribes, but one human society, that we had to have the kind of society that did that in order to have better treatment of animals. As an individual, I find it harder to eat meat and do still eat meat, but rather less than I did. And again, I find it difficult to drink milk, but I do still drink milk because I feel that milk is for young animals, particularly for young cows, rather than for humans. But as an individual, I haven't found it quite possible to go that step further. But I remember Eddie Grant saying, when I think we were being interviewed by someone, and I can't remember who it was, but on the question of vegetarians or eating animals, and he made the point, well, he did eat meat, yes, but if in socialism that you couldn't find anyone to kill the animals, he wouldn't be able to do it. And of course that certainly applies to me, but I'll get there eventually, I expect. But that my main point really is that I consider that you've got to have a more humane society altogether in order to be able to care for all of the animals on the earth. And so I'll leave it there.
Okay. Jane and Tony?
Point, Sarah, for. Seems to me, I mean, in a way, talking a lot about factory farming is simply part of the food, an aspect of capitalism that produces food, namely meat. Well, And factory and industrial farming is not just meat anyway, but but one thing that always strikes me about the whole argument about animal rights is it seems to have an inherent contradiction in it. On the one hand, it's saying we need to be against speciesism and we need to treat all life forms at the same level, but we don't expect anybody else to liberate us. We think the process of human liberation is something that humans are going to carry out. We don't have, I used to love, there was an old song called Chickens and Choppers that was basically animals liberating themselves. But the reality is, apart from the occasional wild boar breaking out and going back to the forest, that happens very rarely. I think the problem with the speciesist thing is that animals are not going to liberate themselves. It is actually up to us human beings to carry out the process of liberation. And if in the process of that liberation, people come to the conclusion, well, yeah, actually that means we need to treat animals better, or we need not to farm them, or we need to simply have far less of them, or whatever, then that's something that comes afterwards. Otherwise it's just a sort of, it feels a bit like, I hesitate to use the word abstract, but abstracted, separated from the rest of the social context, i.e. capitalism. Yeah, that's me.
Adam.
Yeah, I wanted to say something about the concept of Gaia. I think the whole Earth, or the whole, what you might call whole Earth ecosystem, whatever you call it, ecosphere, is probably self-regulated. But in making Gaia into a person, I mean, that's wrong. I mean, it can't be sustained except, of course, there's only one part of nature that does have consciousness and can make decisions about the future, and that is the human species.
Has Adam gone?
Adam, did you stop, or have you, Adam?
Yeah, I had my thing on the. Anyway, I accidentally muted myself. Where did I get to?
Probably a couple of sentences ago.
Anyway, what I was saying is that, insofar as Gaia can be made to have a personality and so on, we the human species, we are the brain of the ecosphere, and we are the only people, as has been pointed out by a couple of previous speakers, we are the only species that's capable of doing anything about it. But even we, as you pointed out, Mark, right at the beginning, are not at present in complete control. We are the subject of economic forces, which, okay, they're our own creations, but they're dominating us and are stopping us as a species doing anything about it. And as Tony just said, animals cannot liberate themselves. Only humans can. But we can only do that, or begin to do that, in practical terms, once we've got rid of capitalism. So the priority has to be to get rid of capitalism first. And in fact, as the brain, if you like, of the biosphere, or the whole Earth Gaia concept, we're the only people that can, when we're in control of the means of production, you know, shape things and as Tony said, liberate animals. But the other point I wanted to make is about this a moral thing. I'm not quite sure what Marx's position is, whether he's objecting to the domestication of animals or to the killing of animals to be eaten. I mean, first of all, not all animals are domesticated to be eaten, but he praises the pre-agricultural life, but that wasn't a plant-based one. It did involve eating other animals. But as to animals being sentient beings, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they do have feelings, and I'm sure they do feel pain. But have they any conception of death? I mean, don't they just live for the moment, more or less? And in that case, the answer to your argument as to why we shouldn't kill other human beings is that other human beings, like your pig, they want to live, but they also don't want to die. I don't think that animals, as I say, have any conception of death. Now, but as other people point out, if you are going to kill animals, the thing to do, it has to be done humanely. You can't go around with it. And I've seen this in a farm in Anglesey when I lived there. A farmer going around with an axe trying to kill a pig. I mean, that sort of thing, completely, can't be defended on any grounds. But there must be, and there are, humane ways of killing animals. So those are the two points I wanted to make about, Gaia. We, the human species, we are the brain, and we are the only people that can do anything about it. But we can't do anything about it until we're in control of the Earth's resources, and until we have socialism, basically. And the second point is that I don't know these moral absolute arguments. They can work both ways. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Adam. Steve. Steve, did you want to come in?
Sorry, Carl. I beg your pardon. I just put me too because Alan said he's probably the only one that's ever killed something to eat. I have as well. But as you've woken me up from the slumber, I'm just wondering about. It's this thing about morality. I've got a real problem with it, and rights as well. I don't see that animals have rights. On what basis are these rights established? By whom? I've got all sorts of problems with that. And I'm afraid I don't have an answer either. I've just got that question: who is deciding that these rights exist? The other thing is this just the thing that could only be put forward at this stage in history? To me, morality has got this some sort of universal application. Yet, would it be possible for Mark to put the argument 200 years ago, when people were reliant on animals for draft purposes? Is it something that you can only say now that you've got the petrol engine? That's me.
Thanks, Steve. Brian, did you want to come in and say something? Brian? Okay, until Brian pops in, I'm wondering, Mark, if you want to address some of those previous points that were made.
Thank you, Carla. So maybe one of the easier ones was because I think Adam wondered or suggested that I may be promoting the hunter-gatherer lifestyle. I wasn't doing that. I wasn't intending to do that. I was trying to give some kind of a what I think is a reasonable account of what happened in history. And yeah, I think I acknowledged fully that we were hunter-gatherers. And you know, if you look at human history in the very early days, we were rather weak vis-a-vis the rest of the animals, and in fact, we were rather more like scavengers. And then, as our cognitive abilities improved, as our tools and weapons improved, we became much more skilled at hunting, and that. We're not having a meeting here to decide whether we're going to abolish hunter-gatherer society or not, or whether we think the agricultural revolution was good or not. There are lots of discussions. Was it a good move? Was it a good thing? We're sitting here thinking, yeah, well, awesome, it was good because we got tablets and we can have our meetings online. Couldn't have done that if we stayed in hunter-gatherer. But I mean, was it good for the people involved? Was it good for the animals? I mean, we can discuss those things. And was it good that in hunter-gatherer society, if there were too many babies, you had to kill some because you can't have more than one baby, you know, carrying with you. So was that good? Was it good that in hunter-gatherer society, if someone was not mobile, was ill, was a burden, was that moral? Was that right? I mean, this is what happened in history, so I wasn't promoting anything. I actually, going back to something that Alan said, my position is that for us, all killing of animals for our pleasure, you know, and especially I would say, well, not especially, but including our taste pleasure, I take it as being wrong, because it's unnecessary, because we don't need it. Having said that, I think that if everyone took Alan's line, basically we would all everyone would be vegan, because the number of people who actually can kill animals themselves, I mean, just have access to that, of course, is in most of the more advanced countries is quite limited. So that would immediately save loads and loads of animals. Draft animals. The thing is, I mean, the issue, what I'm trying, I mean, I really appreciate this discussion, and I appreciate everybody who's been very positive. And thanks, Alan. I didn't thank you because you were very positive at the beginning. I didn't pick up on that. But thanks to everyone for being so open. I mean, this is something I really do believe we need to discuss and clarify. I mean, you know, as an ongoing issue. I you know, what Pat said about humans and human society. I get that. I mean, the thing is, we need to eat, don't we? I mean, we eat two or three times a day, or maybe more, and you know, as socialists, we do take positions on things, things that we don't do or do because we're socialists. I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, I can tell you as someone who's been a vegan now since January 2019, it's not a big deal because there's loads of food to eat. And I don't mean necessarily artificial meat and all that, but even if you eat vegetables and things, and a little bit of this and a little bit, there's loads of great food out there. It's not a big thing. Draft animals. We assume, I mean, that's the whole point of an anthropocentric speciesist view. We assume that animals are there to serve us. So if we need animals to pull our carriages, let them pull it. And there was a time when people were owned by slave masters to pull carriages and to propel galleys. I didn't mean to shout. I'm sorry, I was just being expressive. It's hard to, sorry. People used to, was that, do we agree with that? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it immoral? You know, we don't need people to propel galleys anymore because we've got engines. Oh, that's good. I think some of the questions are all real, but the heart of the matter is, and about our liberating animals, the heart of the matter is that probably not very far from where you're living, there are people, living sentient beings who know what it is to be afraid, who know what pain is. They may not have philosophized about death as we do. And not far from you, they are being kept in awful conditions. And a lot of that is being done behind our backs, like everything happens in capitalism and the shiny thing is put on. And we have the choice whether to go along with it. And that is that's the choice that we're faced with. I don't need to make decisions about draft animals 200 years ago. And I mean that with all due respect to Steve. I mean, I think all these things are worth discussing. But I do think that in our material, we should make a distinction between nature that is not sentient. And I have to say, although I like the word Gaia, I do have to agree with Adam that there is a danger in mystifying the thing. It serves clarity, in my opinion, with all due respect to those who feel it does. But I think we should really think about this, and it's life is posing this to us. This is not I don't feel like I'm not saying that I'm the only one, but I don't feel like I'm a busybody here. Life is posing this to us. As Alan said, our shops are heaving with animal flesh, and I think we can basically say all of it is harvested in the grotesque conditions that Alan was talking about. So these are things that life is posing to us, and I do think they are part of the case for socialism if we can take a clear position on it. So that's my. My sort of rambling there.
Okay. If Brian Johnson doesn't want to come in.
Yes, I'd like to come in. Do you hear me now?
Brian? I can. We can hear you, Brian.
Okay, right. I just wish to confirm, along with Steve, you know, I've also killed animals. You know, my first job was in the butcher shop. My second job was in the slaughterhouse as a boy, right? So I grew up along in my employment, you know, in the killing of animals. And yes, I agree. I've seen some horrible scenes. I mean, one that I'll never forget is the calves. Right? During the time, a calf beat was very expensive. The reason for that is that it wasn't considered to be red meat. It was considered to be white meat, right? And the reason why it was white meat was that the calves were kept in the enclosure overnight, but the slaughterman went amongst each of the calves, right, and nicked at the back end of the of its leg, its back leg, right, and let it bleed overnight. And in the end, when they came up the enclosure for actual slaughter, right, they, you know, some of them had to be picked up and taken into the slaughterhouse to be slaughtered. It was that bad. I mean, I could go on there in regards to the welfare. Yes, it's a sad sight, but we also need to keep in mind as well that if we switch over to a vegetarian diet, because of the damage we've done in regards to domestication of animals, a great majority of animals are going to die because they require our maintenance in order to live. Take sheep. If a sheep is not sheared on a yearly basis, or at least every 4 to 5 years, the fleece will get so heavy it will actually suffocate the sheep. And the same thing goes for cows. Right, all the cows that we've got now, where we're taking the milk from, we'd have to keep them until they die, because if we don't milk them, they're going to die anyway. Things like that, and that concern me for regards the future of animal welfare, etc. Yes, we are eating too much meat, and yes, a lot of that meat is of a cardboard variety, especially in the States, right, where they have the animal lots and all the rest of it, and the animals don't really see any field whatsoever. Right, they bred in the lots, and they're driven then from the lots to the slaughterhouse, and they're killed, and they taste absolutely horrible. And that's why you go for a meal in the States, you're likely to have your plate stacked high, but very unlikely to eat it all if in fact you do, because it's absolutely tasteless. It's cardboard meat. It's industrialized production. That's what we're up against. And to get away from that is going to take ages and years. So in regards to not participating in or mitigating the domestication that's taking place with the animals. That's all I've got to say at the moment. I could say a lot more, but there you go.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Dougie?
I mean, I can understand Mark's passion, you know, and the is moral argument, because it is a moral argument, you know, to say we shouldn't be harming fellow creatures or whatever. But I mean, look at the way human beings treat human beings, you know, the people that are living in squalor in the world, the people that are dying from lack of clean water, the human beings, you know, we need to emancipate ourselves before we can deal with moral questions about animals. But I think I take Mark's point, you know, there is a moral argument to try and treat fellow creatures in a kind way, right, you know. And I think socialism will have morals. Every society has morals. They'd have social society will have better morals than capitalism, the way it treats people and the way it treats animals and the way its food is produced. I mean, I take Paddy's point about factory farming and things like that, is, you know, to criticise that is maybe a better argument. But I mean, I think, you know, this idea that socialists won't have any morals, I mean, capitalism says, you know, the Bible says you shall not kill, then it will send millions of people off to die in wars or whatever. So, I mean, we've got to sort ourselves out before we can sort help to sort other animals who aren't as sentient as we are about the world.
Okay. Alan, Janet?
Yeah, I think the idea that human welfare and animal welfare are separate things, and you've got to sort the human welfare out first. I think that's a misnomer. I mean, and I want to go back to the question of Gaia. Gaia is not a personality. It's not a person. You know, Gaia is a concept. And the fact is that we are a part of an interdependent entity, which is the planet Earth. And, you know, if we disregard that, we do it at our peril, and the peril of many other species as well. I just want to go, going back to, you know, Mark's argument that, I'm losing it. I'm old. I'm an old person, and I'm losing my threads, but Mark made some very good points, and with which I agree enormously. And it's just really about seeing that we are not the controllers of the earth. We might think we are. Religion has told us that we are, Our egos tell us that we are, but the bottom line is we are not. The planet, call it Gaia, call it what you like, it doesn't really matter. This planet, this entity, this Gaia will go on without us. It will spit us out. It is in the process of spitting us out. At the moment here in Turkey, they're suffering appalling wildfires all over the south coast. Villages are being destroyed. People's lives are being destroyed. And then you look at the United States and Canada. Look what's happening there. It will come to you in Northern Europe. It will come. Because you disregard the fact that you are part of an entity which is interdependent. We cannot put ourselves above the planet and above anything else, any other species that is on the planet. We cannot. If we do, we are doomed. And I think personally, I'm speaking my own personal belief here, I think we're doomed anyway. We've passed so many tipping points now in the environment. It doesn't matter what we do. You can stop burning fossil fuels. You can stop all sorts of things. The chances of the governments doing that and looking to the interests of the global population and the world in general are pretty much nil. You know, we've had it. As a species, we've had it. A lot of other species, along with us, have had it. The planet will not die. The planet will change and evolve. And I don't know what's going to come down the road in another million, 2 or 3 million years or whatever. I really don't know. But it's almost an academic argument these days about how we do anything, because it's pretty much too late. I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, we talk as socialists, we want a better world. Our chances of achieving it are pretty much nil because we haven't got any time left. We really don't. The planet is spitting us out as a species.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that, Alan. I'm now depressed. Steve?
Yeah, well, after that council of despair, I can quite see where Alan's coming from, that things are, seem to be, according to the science, in a pretty desperate state. But whether that is gone beyond a tipping point, I do wonder. But I think I'm going to disagree slightly with Alan, because he keeps talking about the planet being this sort of system. Well, I'm sorry, it's not. I accept that there is a biosphere of which we are part, but the planet is not a system at all. Come off it. Let's start to use more scientific terms than that. We live in a biosphere, and we form part of a natural system. I'll certainly agree with that. And we could look at parts of Marx's arguments and look at the idea of that we will go, we will dominate nature, that we will, you know, there are quite a few passages in Marx where you think, hang on, I think we've gone beyond that. We must realise that we're part of this system, that we depend on it absolutely, and it's a very fragile system. So having said that, I just want to go back to what I said before, and Mark seemed to assume that I was just talking about people having the carriages pulled by these draft animals. Well, actually, I was thinking more about the way that people have used animals in the past for agricultural purposes, for ploughing, and in which many people still do on this planet. They still use draft animals. Because which is why I said, is it possible? Are you only able to say what you're saying now because of the invention of the internal combustion engine? Therefore, we've got tractors. Therefore, there's less and less of this use of draft animals. And I also noticed that you didn't answer my main point, which is who's decided that there are things such as animal rights. It's a very new thing. I'm not saying that we shouldn't as sentient beings ourselves, that we shouldn't be treat animals with certainly better than they are at the moment, but that wouldn't stop at killing them. I wouldn't restrict us to not kill them, but certainly the way that they're treated at the moment is absolutely appalling, and they're treated appallingly for economic reasons. So a socialist society, I totally agree with what other people have said, would use animals in a way that is better than it is now. Okay, but probably for our own human purposes, because there would be healthier animals, there would be better, there would be better meat probably. Okay, I'll leave it at that. I'm sorry, I didn't give you any support, Mark, and I admire what you said tonight, Paul.
Okay, Paddy.
Well, yeah, just a quick reflection on the argument that was put a minute ago. A few people have put something that a bit like this, and to sum it up, it kind of goes, basically, we can't do anything about that problem until we get socialism, you know. Well, I just want to take issue with that a minute, because you can apply that to anything. You could apply that to racism, and you could apply that to sexism. In other words, we can't do anything about sexism until we get socialism. So let's just kick these things into the long grass and not worry about them now and concentrate on the revolution first. Now, I think everybody can see what's wrong with that argument. And what's wrong with it is it's a linear argument. It's like you proceed through change in a serial way. One bit of change followed by the next bit of change followed by the next bit of change. So if you want one bit of change that's down the road, we can't think about that now. Well, that's not how change works. Change works in parallel. You get lots of things changing all at once. So the argument that we can't do anything about this now because we've got to concentrate on socialism, we've got to sort ourselves. I think Dougie said we've got to sort ourselves out first. Well, look around you at the world. Maybe this is us sorting ourselves out. I've really got no time for this kind of doom and gloom. We're all doomed. Let's just give up. What's the point of that attitude? If I had that attitude, I would just shut up and not say anything. No, if you look around you at the world, you see all sorts of change. You see all sorts of people getting to grips with new concepts of politics, of trying to apply it, often in bad ways, often in inappropriate ways. But people are trying to rethink how to live. And I think we should be part of that. And I think we should consider that is us sorting ourselves out as a human race. It's happening right now around us. Because other people haven't got this problem of serial change. They understand things can happen in parallel all at once. And I think this animal debate is part of that larger picture of people trying to change. I think there's lots and lots of encouraging things happening in the world. If you only look at the bad things, you will end up with a sort of fatalistic view. But that's a really one-sided view, and it's not helpful to the socialist case to take that view, I don't think.
Thanks, Paddy. Adam,
would
you come in again?
Yeah, I just want to come back on the statement that humans are in control of the planet. But we're not. And that's the point that Mark made right at the beginning with his quotes from Marx and Engels and even in the blurb he wrote for his talk. Humans are not in control of the planet. Capitalism is in control of the planet, and it can't be controlled by humans. So you can't attribute all the things that happen and the cruelty to animals and so on, exploitation of animals, to the human species. You have to attribute it to capitalism. Now, I don't think I agree with what Paddy just said, actually, because I think we have to have the socialist revolution first. We have to be in charge of the world before we can solve these problems. Individual moral stances like becoming a vegan or becoming a vegetarian, that's not going to change the world. It's, in fact, it's a bit of a, I mean, people can do it if they want to as individuals, but we'll say humans are not in control, and until we are in control, we can't really usefully discuss these things. But the argument comes back, we do have to have socialism first, not have all these individual moral stances.
Okay,
Mike. Yeah. I'll try not to be like Mike Fox and say, yeah, that was really good. Mark did a very good talk. I'd like to thank him for it. His overview of how humans have evolved up to the present day was quite well done. I was really astonished at how accurately he got most of it. It was really quite well done. I have to say, I tend to agree a lot with what Alan said recently. At the moment, we're on a business as usual, and the leaders of the world, the controllers of the world, which are humans, the capitalists and the people who work for the capitalists as capitalist states, are running the world, and they're doing business as usual, and that's going to wipe out a lot of humans and other species on the planet if it continues. I can't see how we can take back control of it. That's a problem for another day. Most of the moral arguments I never get into because, in a socialist society, the people alive at the time will make those decisions, and I never like to try and make them for it. There are so many ways of, there's so many things you'd have to take into consideration. Not everybody can be a vegetarian or a vegan. There are large areas in the cities of the United States where to be a vegetarian, you have to be rich, travel to get to shops, food. Otherwise, you have to live on the crap processed food that's in the shops. Large areas of the world are like that. It's not easy being a vegetarian. It's not a matter of a choice. It really is hard to do it in a large part of the planet. Don't like to say, well, you have to do this, you have to do that. Those problems will be decided when we treat humans as humans, rather than beings. Other species of nerd will follow the treatment they will treat humans. Again, I'd just like to say thank you very much for the talk, Mark. It was really well done.
Okay, there's no one in the speaking queue. Mark, would you like to finish up or come back on anything? Oh, perhaps Steve was saying that you didn't answer his question. You're muted.
Sorry about that. Sorry, Carla.
No, that's fine.
So I just wanted to thank everybody for being very gracious. I know that you probably could have torn me apart, but you didn't. I do think that this is, like with the other issues that are descriptive of the problems of the capitalist society we live in, which have roots much deeper, including sexual orientation, feminism, all of the issues that burden us down, that are linked to the central issue of capitalism, but are not only that, and have deeper, they're sort of parallel issues. These are things I think we do have to talk about if we want to have a world socialist movement. We have to be addressing the world as it is. We have to be addressing the issues of the day. And yeah, we do finally say we can address these things can only be solved in socialism. But we take a stance. I mean, I think we're not. We take a stance. We don't tolerate some things. By the way, On the question of war, I know this is opening another can of worms, and I have to chuck it out there. On the question of war, the Socialist Party not only, of course, was a outstanding opponent of war, but the Socialist Party also, as I understand it, the members of the party didn't join the armed forces. So they were actually draft resistors. That was identified by other groups. I know that Trotskyists would have identified it in that way as a moral stance. You're not going to stop wars by not joining the army. You know, the only way we can stop wars is by having a socialist revolution. But nevertheless, they did take a stance, not because it's going to change the world, but it's just part of being a socialist. So if we decide something is right or wrong, we're just gonna go with it. I don't think we need to have any complexes about it. I know that we have to be convinced. But if we are going to talk about what socialism is going to look like, and we're going to say, "Oh, the animal question, we don't know really," I don't think that's a great position to have. And I will get finally to Steve's question on rights. The right, we're not talking about, you know, the cow being able to take the farmer to court. Yeah, we're not talking about rights in that way. We're talking about the right of the animal not to be my slave, not to be my property, not to be mine to kill just as I wish. That means the right to be in the moral sphere and not to be treated as a thing, as an object. That's what actually a really consistent position on animal rights goes. Just like another person's, I don't need all the rights. I just need that I'm nobody, you know, that I'm not owned by somebody. I mean, there are all sorts of other things that I need to have in our world. But all the animals need to have is that we don't think that we can just take them and do whatever we want with them. And then we talk about how liberation is such a big problem. Liberation is the problem of human beings dominating over them and making them their own property to do what, to be the lord of life and death over them, which is what Genesis, from the Fertile Crescent, from the agricultural revolution, told us to do. Except, well, that's bullshit. So, but thank you, comrades. I feel very flattered that we've had one of the longest meetings. And it wasn't just because I was doing all the talking. A lot of what you guys said is stuff that I wish I could have said it with that clarity and eloquence. So thank you very much. I'm really proud to be a member of a party where we can actually talk about these issues. And I look forward to us doing so and trying to clarify.
Okay, just before we finish up, Steve, you're in the speaking queue.
Yeah, he just opened a can of worms.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean...
I knew it. I shouldn't have done it.
The issue is you can't equate what you've just been saying with the stance that the socialists took against the war, because they took a class position. They took a class position not on, in terms of, I don't want to fight because I'm a pacifist, I don't want to fight because it's not my struggle. And the Socialist Party, the stance of the Socialist Party, as I understand it, has always been that if we meet resistance from the ruling class, when once we've got a democratic majority, there's nothing going to stop us from using violence against them to prevent the preventing a socialist revolution. So we're not moral in that respect. It was a class decision and not a moral decision. And you're talking about moral decisions. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
I agree with what you just said, Steve.
Okay, so is this a wrap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Carla. Thank you for chairing.